stops and shoots me this disappointed look, not too different from the one I'd find on your face when I was camping out in my silent zone. "I'm sorry I tried, Griffin. I really thought you would get it." Whether I like it or not, I have to speak up. Jackson also has history with you. I'm sure you both had inside jokes, favorite spots, pictures that will sting me but might be worth seeing to see your face again, stories that may introduce me to who you were out in California. There's a side of you I never saw. Jackson not only knew that side, he loved you for it. "Don't go," I say. "You're right. We love the same guy, and it's weird. And he would want us to talk anyway, even about the stuff I don't want to hear or the things I'd rather keep to myself." I get up from my bed and go to my closet. I pull out the air mattress, the one my parents bought for the rare occasions they allowed you to sleep over after we started dating. Not that we used it. "You should stay. It's gross outside. Maybe we can have a do-over tomorrow morning." He hesitates. "You sure?" I unroll the air mattress on the opposite side of my room, away from my bed. "Yeah, it's cool." I pull my phone charger out of the outlet, throwing it onto my bed, and plug in the air pump. It's noisy. I might wake up my parents, but there's no way around that. It's 1:45, and I'm ready to pass out after I get to listen to your voicemail. "Thanks, Griffin," he says quietly. "No problem. I can get you something to wear." Out of habit, I reach for your drawer and pull it open. I freeze for a second, taking in your 4 t-shirts, 2 pairs of pajamas, gym shorts, even though you hate the gym. Socks, a Monopoly onesie you brought over as a joke, and a hoodie. I'm never dressing Jackson in your clothes. I close your drawer and open one of mine, tossing out a long-sleeved shirt I've outgrown and pajamas onto the air mattress. "Do you want some water?" "If you don't mind, thanks." I leave my room, pee, brush my teeth, tiptoe around the kitchen while getting 2 glasses of water, and return to find Jackson in my clothes. I hand him his glass. I'm still thrown off by his presence. This guy I've wanted nothing to do with. By how he is actually spending the night in a room where I did everything with you, from sleeping to sex, playing video games to putting together puzzles, fighting and trading weird kisses, bad karaoke and slow dancing to no music. This place of being ourselves and each other's, and so much in between and everything else. I grab him a comforter from the closet, a pillow from my bed. It's all stuff only I used, not what you used. Those stay with me. I'm left with 3 pillows, so I toss them a second without explaining why. "I'm passing out," I say, switching off the light. Jackson is hit with the slant of moonlight. "Bathroom is to the left of my room if you need it." "Thanks," Jackson whispers, like I'm already sleeping. "Good night." I roll into bed, still in my jeans and your hoodie, and turn my back on him. I hug your pillow to my chest and rest my face where you used to rest yours. My phone is dying, but I connect my headphones and press play on your voicemail, over and over. In the middle of the 4th listening, Jackson calls out to me.
"Griffin. Sorry, Griffin. You awake?"
"Yeah." I stare at the wall.
"Thanks for giving me a shot. I see now why Theo never shut up about you."
I don't respond, but I put the phone down. I press my face deeper into the pillow, squeezing my eyes shut, and I do my damn best to fall asleep, but my ear tugging and need to cry keep me awake. You kept me alive when we were apart. I promise I'll always do the same for you. Jackson's crying wakes me up. He's trying to suppress it, but it keeps slipping out. He sounds a lot like me the past few days,
how I give in to the grief but make sure I wasn't loud enough to draw attention from those who think words will make me feel better. I can't turn around because if the bed creaks, he'll know I'm awake. I don't know how to comfort this outsider. Jackson, like me, loves you. Also like me, he is stuck in this universe without you. I know what you'd say. There are limitless alternate universes. Is there one where you've decided to watch over Jackson from the afterlife? No, that's wrong. Even Jackson said you were always talking about me. I refuse to believe I'm living in a universe where you're not even with me in death. I refuse to believe that you're hurting for him right now as he cries, tilting your telescope a little bit to the left to find me wide awake, not doing anything to comfort him. You must think I'm the worst human ever. And I swear, I'm not. I've made some mistakes, sure, and if you've already caught on, I'm sorry. But I can't reverse time and undo them. You'll have to forgive me. That's assuming you're in this universe. That you're watching, Theo. History. Friday, October 31st, 2014. The Haunted Mansion jigsaw puzzle I'm piecing together with Wade and Theo's bedroom floor is really coming together. I'm not sure if this is good or bad. It's a 200-piece puzzle we're spending time on instead of partying with everyone else on Halloween. Wade looks up, holding the piece needed to crown the Ghost King, tapping it against the shattered windows of the mansion. He's dressed as Doctor Who.
"Hey, Theo, would you mind hurrying the hell up?" he asks. "How often does Halloween land on a Friday?"
"More so than it lands on Friday the 13th, Theo says without missing a beat. He's not even fully dressed up yet. He's still at his computer, reworking his early admissions essay.
"I was 11 when I said that," I moan.
"Let it go."
I love Theo, but I also really love Halloween. There's a party in Brooklyn with fog machines and karaoke and a DJ and, above all, a costume contest we're all trying to get to, but Theo's essay is due at midnight. He was going to submit it at 7 o'clock until he made the big mistake of reading it one last time. Turns out he no longer believes in everything he spent the past month writing about. Now it's 9:45, odd minute, and we're still here in this fogless, karaoke-less, DJ-less room. At least there are costumes.
No one here is really a fan of Doctor Who, but Wade is wearing this tweedy jacket, red bow tie, matching fedora, and carrying around some wand-like stick, all because of Shania, the party's host, a big Doctor Who fan and Wade's latest crush. Since Wade doesn't care about the character, a bet has started up. Every time Wade is called Black Doctor Who, Theo owes Wade a dollar. Of course, Theo and I are in the greatest get-ups this universe has ever seen. Zombie pirates. It's a tribute to our relationship, obviously, but it's also just stupid, goofy fun. Tonight, I'm Griffey the shipmate, who was slain by one-eyed Theo the Bloody. Except Theo still doesn't have a single drop of fake blood on him that didn't come from hugging me.
"How much more time do you need?" Wade asks. "I'm sure your essay is fine."
"If I were shooting for fine, we would have been out the door a week ago," Theo says, spinning away from his laptop to glare at us. "Everything could change if I get everything right here, okay?" He really gets this fed up. In his eyes, there are few emergencies in the world worth freaking out over. "I would have to be really dumb to think I'm the smartest dude out here. There are so many candidates more qualified than me, and I'm not counting on them screwing up their essays for me to get in. I have to be the best." He hides his face in his hands.
"Sorry. You guys should probably head out without me."
Wade glances at me, silently asking if we should leave.
"You go ahead," I tell him. "Good luck with Shania."
"Good luck with the essay, Theo," Wade says. "I'll send you the Black Doctor Who bill."
Once he bounces, I kneel in front of Theo, taking his hands in mine. I see his eyes are red. My own eyes widen. What's going on? This is the closest I've ever seen him come to crying.
"It's the changes, Griff.
I now have it in my head that I want to be in college by next year. I know it's not all good things if I get accepted. It's a year away, and I already know I'm going to miss you so hard. Theo sinks to the floor with me, wraps my arm around his shoulders, and rests his face against my chest. You know I love you.
I love you too.
I love the idea of college too. I hope that doesn't break us. I just always sort of thought high school was this game with scores that don't matter. But I'm wrong. The right people are paying attention. In some alternate universe where I didn't get off on being top of the class, I probably would have slacked and missed out on this opportunity.
But you didn't miss it, I point out. You're rewriting this thing for the fourth time because you care so much about it.
If I don't get accepted, it's going to feel like a huge blow.
That's a lot of pressure, Theo.
It's pressure you weren't counting on being under for another year, I remind him. I massage his arm and take a deep breath. It's never been easy finding the right words to comfort someone so brilliant.
You're not just someone with good grades, Theo.
I wait for him to correct me with something cute like astronomically amazing grades or the greatest grades in all the land. But he doesn't have it in him right now.
You're not someone that just memorizes facts for exams and forgets them the next day. You don't have lucky guesses and pop quizzes. You bring textbooks with you in the shower. Basically, you're a really weird superhero.
He forces a smile. One day, Batman is going to take off his mask, and boom, it'll be me.
Robin is hotter, but I'll settle.
Theo looks up at me, and I lean forward and kiss him.
How'd I do? I ask, with the pep talk.
I'm motivated, Theo says. I'm feeling guilty you're not out there enjoying your favorite holiday. Get out of here.
I pull off my eye patch and throw it across the room. That thing is itchy anyway. I stand, pulling him up with me. You're taking a 2-minute recess before diving back into the essay.
Theo seems a little anxious, but he's okay with giving me 2 minutes in exchange for my Halloween.
My parents taught me these kisses when I was younger.
I lean into his face, like I'm going in for a kiss, but I brush his eyelashes against mine and wait for him to do the same.
That's a butterfly kiss.
Kinda tickles, Theo says. I bump his forehead with mine a couple of times.
That's a caveman kiss.
I didn't know cave people were so romantic.
I rub his nose against mine, not stopping until Theo mimics me. That's an Eskimo kiss. I want a fourth kiss now, something special like these. My parents only taught me 3, but I'll figure out another now. I look out the window where the streets are alive and undead from Halloween.
Here's a zombie kiss.
I nibble on his cheek, growling.
I bust out laughing when Theo returns his own zombie kiss.
I like the zombie kiss best, Theo says. Screw college, let's have sex instead.
Your parents and Denise are here.
Screw them too.
I smile. Nope, I'm helping you with your essay. Come on.
I point to his desk chair and he sighs, but he can't sit still and starts pacing.
The question is simple. What creation are you proudest of?
Theo had originally wanted to talk up some of his animation videos, but tonight he changed his mind. He's super proud of his alternate universes. Together we look through his journal. We're standing by the window, but I'm not even the slightest bit distracted by all the Harry Potters and slutty dinosaurs walking the streets. Theo is practically walking me through his brain, a tour of his imagination, and we're both lost in it. Lost in why this universe we live in beats the rest. We're 2 zombie pirates who aren't leaving the ship to feed on brains, but there's definitely a greater voyage ahead. Anyway, we always have next Halloween.
Today, Friday, November 25th, 2016.
Good morning, Theo.
Sorry I shut down on you last night. I couldn't shake off that haunting suspicion you're hovering over Jackson instead of me. It was like some itch breeding around my body, always a second too late from scratching it dead.
Don't roll your eyes, but I did some soul-searching.
I dug deep into our history. I remembered all our good times and the happy memories that would have eventually brought you back to me in life. I no longer believe I'm in this alone, talking to myself. I am still questioning how often you're looking around for Jackson, though.
Jackson. I haven't forgotten he's here. His crying stirred a tornado of sympathy and rage in me. And while I remained firm against the force of that grief, I am definitely battered. I should have turned around to see if he'd won himself out and fallen asleep or lay awake staring at walls like me, but I couldn't bring myself to do it.
Jackson was right. Yesterday was a bad start for him and me. I don't even know what it's the start of. Thankfully, there's no school today, so I don't have to spend this morning fighting with my parents to let me stay home or zombie walk in between classes when they send me anyway. Jackson and I will use the time attempting a do-over for you. I sit up when my phone flashes 802. When I turn, Jackson isn't in bed. The comforter is flat on the air mattress. Jackson's clothes are on the floor. But he's not here. I leave my room to see if he's in the bathroom showering or something and find the bathroom door wide open. I hear the loud clatter of my mom's laptop keys. You always joked with her about it, accusing her of trying to look busy so she wouldn't have to answer your probing questions about what she was like as a teen. In the living room, I find Mom at the dining room table with Jackson, who's sitting in your seat. I wonder if Mom told him it was your seat or if he felt drawn to the seat because of you. Maybe it's a total coincidence.
I'm sorry about that, Mom is saying. At first I think she's apologizing to me. But she closes her laptop and looks up at Jackson.
Some clients don't get the notice I'm supposed to be email-free today. So, you're skipping the rest of your semester? My professors have been understanding, but I don't have it in me, Jackson says.
Same,
I say, joining them at the table. I sit opposite of Jackson, like I normally did whenever it was you in that seat, and I keep my eyes on the bagel in front of him. Except, no one's giving me a timeout, so I'm pretty much going to fail everything.
There's still time to turn everything around, Mom says gently.
She goes on about conversations she's had with my teachers about extra credit and issuing me hall passes so I can run to my guidance counselor's office whenever. But she loses me when I look up. I'm registering why Jackson Wright is here, in my apartment, in my clothes.
In a lot of ways, Jackson is a clone of me.
Our hazel eyes are strained from sleeplessness and crying, framed with pale black bags darker than the ones I got last summer from when we spent an entire week playing Xbox games online until morning. His bagel has barely been touched, and I bet he's also been eating just enough lately to shut up his growling stomach. He's also unable to operate through schoolwork and everything else life demands. He loves you, and you loved him.
Griffin? Griffin? Mom grabs my hand and squeezes.
Sorry. I slide my hand out from under hers. Got lost in my head again. I hide my hand under the table so Jackson doesn't see me scratching my palm.
No need to apologize.
My mom stands and picks up her laptop.
I'm going to wake up your father.
I don't know when he made his way over to the bedroom, but hopefully my mom catches him up on why Jackson is here.
How'd you sleep? I ask him. Playing dumb is another form of lying, I know.
Jackson shrugs and avoids my eyes.
You know.
I don't know if he means, you know how it is, or you know damn well I didn't sleep very well, but I'm not investigating further.
Have you spoken to Russell or Ellen?
I called Ellen an hour ago. It sounds like they're all relaxing this morning.
Jackson picks up his bagel,
and looks like he's about to spin it like a quarter before looking up at me with flushed cheeks. Maybe this is something he does at home or did with you. Thanks again for letting me stay last night. I thought about heading back out this morning to give you your space, but your mom was awake when I came out here to call Ellen. Did she recognize you from the funeral? And the playing dumb continues, because my mom is admittedly pretty familiar with photos of Jackson. I showed her the online album you made of you two. I wanted her to tell me I'm not crazy for seeing a resemblance between him and me.
She did, yeah,
Jackson says, and cringes a little.
There's no denying she was really surprised to see me.
I imagine she was shocked at all the funeral attendees who witnessed two boys at your funeral, their awkward competitiveness, each delivering a eulogy about the love of his life. Until this morning, my mom had never seen another boy coming out of my bedroom who wasn't you. My bad. I should have left her a note on the whiteboard so she knew you were here.
She played it cool, Jackson says.
He leans toward me and lowers his voice.
I gotta ask you something. Please answer honestly. I wouldn't ask something if I didn't think I could handle it. All right?
He's going to ask something crazy intimate about you, Theo. I can feel it. Maybe he's bold enough to ask about our first time or why I broke up with you.
Do you hate me? Jackson blurts out. I know we don't know each other, but I get it if you hate me or hated me. I guess I want to know where we stand without Theo.
This breakfast is even weirder than the first breakfast you forgot me, the one a few weeks after we broke up, where you didn't send me a picture of what you were eating with some pretentious caption. Your pictures always had a 90% chance of making me smile and feel okay about actually getting out of bed. But Jackson, right in my living room, asking me if I hate him? That is definitely stranger. I'm about to try and answer him when my parents walk out of their room together.
Gregor, this is Jackson, Mom says.
Jackson stands and holds out his hand. Every second Dad doesn't shake it, I feel guiltier and guiltier for being the source of his resistance, with all my hating and crying. He finally gives in, probably remembering he's an adult who must put that ahead of being a father when another kid is involved, especially a kid who must already be uncomfortable as hell in our house.
Morning, Dad says.
He quickly moves to the couch. How long are you in town for?
I'm flying back on Monday, Jackson says, standing. I should actually make my way back over to Theo's house now.
He tries to take his plate to the kitchen sink, but my mom intercepts him, the way she always intercepted you. He turns to both my parents. Thank you for breakfast and for being cool with me staying over. He walks back to my room and I follow him, leaning against the threshold.
You good? I ask.
Jackson sits on the air mattress, his head hanging low as he flips his phone around in his palms like one of those finger-sized skateboards.
Are you good?
Of course not.
Same here.
Jackson puts his phone down, folds his comforter, picks his clothes up from the floor, and heads to the bathroom without a word. I twist open the air mattress's nozzle, staring while it deflates, the piercing whistle quieting down as the bed folds into itself. I throw everything in the closet, including the pillow he slept on.
I'm drained. I would be game for a nap. I owe him another shot, though. I know it.
Jackson returns from the bathroom and hands me the clothes he slept in. Thanks again for letting me crash, Griffin. I'm going to hail a cab. Save your money, I say, pretty unaware what his cash situation is, though I'm going to go ahead and guess average. I can walk you there. I grab my peacoat to throw over your hoodie.
Isn't it really cold outside?
Probably not that bad. I check the temperature on my phone's app. Okay, it's pretty cold out, but I'm sure you could use some fresh air too. I pull on my boots and grab my phone and keys. Especially if you're just going to stay in the apartment all weekend.
You're right. Thanks, Griffin.
He gets suited up in his jacket and single glove. I'm tempted to look for an extra pair of gloves, but he's already hurrying for the door. In the living room, he waves at my parents. You would know better, but I can't tell if his wave is half-hearted or hesitant. Thanks again for breakfast, Mrs. and Mr. Jennings. I hope you both have a nice weekend. I never gave him my last name. I'm guessing you did, or Facebook told him. But I catch a glimpse of what you must have seen, and not just from his manners. He's definitely got that pull over to rescue a boy from the rain harp. Have a safe flight home. My dad doesn't get up from the couch. He barely looks up from his laptop. He's undoubtedly playing one of those puzzle games you got him so he could keep his mind sharp on days off and weekends. Where are you going, Griffin? I'm going to walk him back to Theo's. I'll always call it your place, even if you never spent a single dollar on rent, even if you're not physically living there anymore. I want to go for a walk anyway. Neither of my parents will protest. They're well aware the alternative will be me camping out in my room, listening to your voicemail on continuous loop.
Sounds good. Call us if your plans change.
Mom gets off her laptop and comes over to shake Jackson's hand.
I'm sorry again for...
She cuts herself off, her eyes darting around. I really hope she wasn't to call you Jackson's loss again.
Good luck deciding what you'll do about school.
I lead the way out without saying anything. Jackson follows me down the staircase, and I don't know if he can sense my shift in attitude, but I need to get my act together before that final step so I don't take it out on him again. I hate that word right now, and probably always will, since it's been tagged with this very moment of betrayal and disappointment. This kind of haunting is why people have to watch what they say and what they do. I hit the last step, and I'm still carrying this ugliness on me, and I can't shake it off of me any more than I can shake off my grief or shame. I'm like a coin constantly flipping heads, tails, heads, tails, heads, tails, heads, tails, like someone tossed me into the air to settle something once and for all, but didn't catch me. And now I'm falling into an abyss, unable to see what will come up when I land. I hide my hand in my jacket pocket. I scratch my palm in peace. I'm tempted to take Jackson down my usual route to your house, but it'll stir too many memories. Let's pop a left, I say, turning away from the supermarket and car rental place at the last second. You have friends in New York, right? Sort of. My pals Annika and Veronica are studying theater at NYU. We went to high school together back home, but it's one of those friendships where distance ruins everything. Jackson shrugs. I miss them, but I can see online they're doing just fine without me. How close were you three? We've been tight since freshman year. It was the first meeting for the Dungeons and Dragons Club when we wanted to join, but I could tell they were as hesitant as I was about what that would mean for our high school status. I don't know. We were being 14, I guess. So, Jackson is one of those 18-year-olds who speaks about being 14 like it was 10 lifetimes ago. I bet you found that charming. By junior year, we got over all that nonsense, but since Annika's ex-boyfriend was in the Dungeons and Dragons Club, we formed our own after-school club at Annika's house and made up our own game, Cages and Chimeras. Theo even...
You what?
Theo what? I ask out loud. Theo got to play the game with Annika and Veronica in February when we were here. I didn't know this. I wanted to hang out with you, of course. But there's no way I was willing to suffer through watching you hold Jackson's hand or laugh at his jokes. I nod politely, which Jackson completely misses because he's not looking at me. Why didn't you reach out while you're here? I ask. Annika and Veronica are both home for Thanksgiving. I think they're coming back the day I leave, which sucks. They wanted to Skype chat, but... He shuts himself up again. I'm ready to challenge him again, to tell me more, but he stops. We're in front of the window of Game Express, my favorite video game store. You have to admit that even though you were always more of a game shop loyalist, Game Express never let you down because of the discounts.
Are you cool with going in here for a minute or two?
Yeah, let's go. I can find you in there. The warmth inside feels good. I don't recognize the young woman behind the counter, and I would definitely remember someone with blue streaked hair and yellow contacts, a demon vibe. It's really cool. But I shouldn't be surprised about new faces. I haven't been here since earlier this summer, and even that visit wasn't for very long.
They have a lot of Game Boy stuff, Jackson muses.
He picks up a couple of bargain games from a bucket, dropping them back in a second later.
Yeah, it's great.
There's nothing I want to buy, so I just follow Jackson around as he tours the store, my favorite, not yours, for the first time. At least, I think he's never been here before. I don't know why you would have walked with Jackson over here in the winter unless you were trying to bump into me and mess with my head or make me miss you more.
Let me shut up or you'll think I'm back to my old paranoid self. I swear I've improved. I swear I have a better grip on reality these days.
Jackson spends a lot of time with the Xbox games. He checks out a racing game, a fighting game, and a spy game before moving on. I stop him.
Anything else here catching your eye?
Not really.
I was counting the games you looked at, and you stopped at 3.
Okay. He's confused.
I have this thing with numbers. I prefer things to be done in evens.
I didn't even hear you counting.
I was counting in my head.
I'm always counting in my head. Sometimes I don't even realize it, but I know I am.
I know how this sounds. And I want to be able to tell him and the rest of the world that it's okay.
That we don't have to get caught up on odd occurrences like this. But I know it won't be okay. If I can control something for my sanity, I want to give myself that relief. 3 makes me really anxious in ways that 1 doesn't, because things often come in ones. So 3 marks the first odd number where I'm always anticipating a 4th whatever. I can't focus otherwise.
Jackson nods and picks up some discounted Halo sequel.
It doesn't feel as natural as the first 3 games he reviewed, so I'm tempted to ask him to check out 2 more games. That way, I'll have 2 sets of 3, and I can clock out of this moment with the glowing 6. But I accept it and move on.
Thanks, I say.
If he's judging me, I can't read it on him. I don't believe he has that ugliness inside of him, truthfully. Unlike some of my classmates these past few months, you know nothing about this, as my compulsions worsened.
Anytime, Jackson says.
He continues cruising the aisles, and every now and again I catch him glancing at me. It's possible I've ruined his browsing experience by making him extra conscious of doing everything in even numbers, but maybe not. He seems relaxed here, like he's ditched his grief at the door, unaware it will continue stalking him the moment we leave. His peace reminds me of you on the floor in front of a puzzle. We wander over to a display of classics. Your weight pins me down even more when I see those cartridges lined up. I never owned any of these consoles, but you were obsessed. The first PlayStation and Nintendo, Sega Genesis, the short-lived Dreamcast, and a bulky Game Boy that couldn't possibly fit in anyone's pocket. I smile in spite of myself at the dusty glass shelves, remembering times I played some of them with you or watched you kick ass while I did homework. Pac-Man, Space Invaders, Earthworm Jim, Sonic, Mortal Kombat, Batman, on and on.
It's like a flea market, Jackson says.
Except not, I point to a not-for-sale sign. I like that it's just a shrine.
Bonus points for it not being in a museum.
I spot a cartridge on a lower shelf. Tetris. I sit on my knees. Jackson crouches and joins me.
His favorite, Jackson says.
The comment doesn't bother me the way others have, because you playing Tetris isn't a very intimate detail. Hell, even your teachers knew about your Tetris addiction from all the times they confiscated your phone during class. Jackson presses his hand against the case. Maybe he's forgotten I'm there, here, right next to him. I have a story for Jackson. Did Theo ever tell you about Mac, the family curse?
No.
He hated it so much. I mean, most people would hate it. But he thought it would be perfect, because it was this game where you get around doing physics-based puzzles. But there were so many glitches that Theo charged himself with going back to the store to buy out all the copies so no one else had to suffer through it. I bet him $2 he wouldn't do it. I lost. Jackson laughs a little, which is awesome, because this was basically a $40 joke on you. Well, $38 joke, since you made $2 back. He ranted about the game for days. Sometimes I would wake up to a text about something else he hated about it or found illogical. I'm smiling again, and this time I'm smiling with him, which is a nice little recess from confusion and heartache and guilt and unhappiness. It's the kind of relief I felt whenever I was stuck homesick, missing your face and voice, and then you would call me the second school was over, and I would feel whole again. I would give everything to be able to play Tetris with you right now, knowing I can't rips away the moment and banishes me back to this empty universe. I'll wait for you outside, I tell Jackson. I get up and leave so quickly, I'm sure the blue-haired cashier thinks I probably pocketed a Yoshi keychain or something. The cold air bites my face, a useless zombie kiss. Jackson joins me a few seconds later, empty-handed. If he was planning on shopping, shitty timing to buy a game if so, I totally ruined it for him. I'm sorry I made you talk about him, he says. I didn't know that story. It's weird, but it's cool to learn something new about him instead of remembering all our good times, you know? It's good to talk about him, I agree. It always is. But it sucks that I'm talking about you, and to you, and that you can't talk back. Something Jackson will be going back to California not ever knowing. I know talking about Theo keeps him alive, but that doesn't make it any less hard that he isn't walking around here keeping himself alive. Jackson nods and pockets his hands, shivering. That's all. He's staring at me the same way that I'm staring at him, in misery. I won't lie to him about how I'm sure this will get better, and he doesn't try consoling me with any of that nonsense either. I move to his left and lead us back toward your house. Here we are. He stands in front of the door, waiting to be buzzed in without having even looked at the intercom. So I guess he was used to getting let in when he stayed here in February. I press 2B for him while he bounces up and down. He's either warming himself up or really has to pee. Not that he would have said so during our completely silent walk over here.
Who is it?
Helen calls down through the speaker. Jackson answers for himself and adds my name. Ellen buzzes us in. I wasn't actually planning on going up, I tell Jackson. I just wanted to walk you back. Don't you want to see everyone? Of course I do, especially Denise, but I don't know. I want to respect their grieving period too and not move in on their space. I've thought about this a lot, but I never planned on telling Jackson, the ghost who's haunting your home right now. I didn't mean that as a shot against you. I know your options were pretty limited, especially with your friends back home this week. Can I be honest with you? Jackson says. He moves deeper into the lobby, avoiding the chill that keeps creeping in through the front door. It'd be nice to have you up there with me, even just for a few minutes. He's a puzzle piece that doesn't fit. And he knows it. I can only imagine your face if I said no to Jackson right now. I'm sure it would look a lot like the face you made the last time I saw you. But I don't want to think about that. Forget I brought it up. That's taboo. Let's go up, I tell Jackson. I barely register Jackson thanking me. Up the staircase we go toward your apartment.
and I don't want to be here. It's too soon. It will always be too soon. Time doesn't heal all wounds. We both know that's bullshit. It comes from people who have nothing comforting or original to say. But I wonder if others keep up with this lie because they don't want to speak the harsh truth. The wound never closes and the pain remains. Always piercing, always burning, always suffocating, always bleeding. Ellen greets us at the door. She isn't waving with her fingers like usual. It might have something to do with how it isn't you and me returning from a movie, but instead two boys who love you.
Good morning.
Morning, Jackson says, slipping past her. Morning, Ellen. I step inside, hugging her once she closes the door. She hugs me back. It's the first time we've held each other since losing you. In this one hug, I no longer feel like she's disappointed in me for breaking up with you, that she will see me as her other son. In that instant, I'm glad I let Jackson convince me to be here. Ellen takes me by the arm.
Let me make you boys some iced tea.
I'll say it long after the zombie pirates have won. Anyone who rejects your mother's iced tea, even during winter, hates happiness. I follow her into the kitchen, and everything looks the same, except for the addition of a round table by the window. Jackson sits first. I grab four glasses, an extra for Denise, to distract myself from trying to figure out what happened to the old, perfectly fine table.
I'm wondering if this new one has been here for so long that Ellen wouldn't even consider it new anymore. I sit beside Jackson, and Ellen begins her routine, slicing fresh lemons for us.
Theo would have wanted all of this, right? Ellen says quietly. Did you have a good evening?
It was good, Jackson says. I don't know what else to add. I hear the tinkle of piano keys off in the living room. That Denise playing?
Should be.
Ellen peeks into the next room while stirring the iced tea.
Good. Russell is with her. My sister forwarded some article to me on Wednesday or Tuesday. The days are scrambled. It doesn't matter. She sent me an article about distracting children from their grief by forcing them to stick to their routines. She pours us iced tea. It's worth a shot.
Totally. My routines calm me down when they're not turning me inside out.
Ellen checks her watch. We're taking her to her friend Mitali's house in a little bit.
Without another word, she ducks out into the living room.
I remember Mitali. She's the fast talker. Your parents hosted that detective party for her years ago. Mitali and Denise and a bunch of other girls whose names even I don't remember insisted on being called grown-up detectives instead of kid detectives and took it way too seriously, but we played along. You were the murder victim in the living room, surrounded by yellow crime scene tape, cough, party streamers, cough, until you got up for a water break when they were investigating their latest clue in Denise's bedroom. Big mistake. Mitali rushed out and said you were cheating. The best part? She accused me of being a bad doctor for being wrong about your being dead. I wish you were cheating at death this time, too. I down the iced tea and place my glass in the sink. Jackson and I follow Ellen into the living room. On the couch are folded blankets and a pillow. Maybe staying in your bed was too much, and Jackson camped out there. I don't ask him. Ellen crouches beside Denise, who is sitting on the piano bench with Russell, and grabs her hand in both of hers. We have to head out in a bit. Mitali's father said he's making the apple pie you love. Do you want help picking out something cute to wear?
I can dress myself, Denise says.
Her voice is flat. She pulls her hands out of your mother's, swings off the bench, sees me, turns away, and returns for a double take, and her eyes widen.
Griffin!
She charges towards me and hugs me around my waist. I don't think I fully registered at the funeral how freaking big she's getting.
What's up, Dee?
What are you doing here?
The answer is awkward, but I owe it to your sister to tell the truth.
Jackson stayed over at my house last night, and I walked him back over here.
Denise's face scrunches up,
and she looks back and forth between Jackson and me.
I thought you two hated each other.
Something you said to me once? The world should stop lying to kids because they're always brutally honest with us.
Denise!
Ellen scolds.
Denise, cheese, Russell says.
Her cheeks flush. I hate that she's embarrassed over this.
Griffin and I just haven't had a chance to be friends yet, Jackson says.
I feel like he's talking down to her a little bit, don't you?
I don't think he means to, but maybe he hasn't spent enough time around kids.
More importantly, he doesn't deny her claim. He really thinks I hate him. And even though I don't want to set him on fire or curse him to die 1,000 deaths, I'm not sure he's wrong.
Yeah.
That's the best I got. Then Ellen forces Denise to get ready for apple pie and playtime with her chatty friend, who is bound to go on and on about typical 9-year-old stuff that she can't possibly care about anymore. Losing you is going to be her express ticket to adulthood, I bet. I sit on the couch, fighting away the memories, keeping my eyes off your closed door straight ahead. Russell is sitting on the edge of the piano bench, his face in his hands. I don't know what to say, so I bring up the routines because talking about normalcy seems, well, normal.
Yeah, the routines, Russell growls. I'm sure Virginia will send Elle another psychobabble article on the drive over to Mitali's and we'll drop everything to try that out.
He gets up and pulls a pack of cigarettes out of his bathrobe pocket.
Could you let Elle know I'll be outside by the car?
I've never seen Russell bounce so quickly. He doesn't seem to remember or care he's in a bathrobe. It's only a couple of minutes before Ellen and Denise emerge from the bedroom, dressed in new clothes for the playdate. Ellen's eyes dart around with the same intensity as on those mornings she would drive us to the arcade in New Rock and you were still in the shower.
Where is Russell?
Jackson points with his thumb toward the front door.
Stepped out?
He said he'll be by the car, I add. If Ellen is trying to mask her annoyance, she's failing. She takes a deep breath and tosses a ring of keys onto the couch between Jackson and me.
You boys know where everything is. Griffin, you're welcome to hang around, of course. Jackson, if you step out, don't forget the keys. We should be back in a couple of hours.
Denise gives me a hug and Jackson a high five on her way out. I won't hang around long, I tell Jackson once we're alone.
I'm not kicking you out, Jackson says.
I know. I definitely don't plan on being here when your parents and sister return. It's just too much on them, you know?
It's hard being here. I don't know how the hell you're doing it.
Without choice, Jackson answers.
Right. It's good that you were here.
I mean that.
No way was I going to miss his funeral, Jackson says.
I get up and go towards your bedroom door. I'm pretty damn aware you won't be on the other side, hunched over your desk, drafting a rough sketch of a universe you hope to bring to life in an animation. I'm still tempted to knock anyway.
I haven't gone inside, Jackson says.
I turn away from your door.
What? I thought you were sleeping there.
Hell no. Would you have been able to?
I've imagined this scenario before, and find myself in your bed, always. But I missed being in your room with you long before you died.
Have you seen his parents in there?
Russell, a couple times, yeah. Did anyone say they didn't want you in there? Jackson shakes his head. I turn back to the door and grab the doorknob. I'm going in. You can do what you want, but I'll go with you, Jackson says. I feel his fast footsteps on the floor. He stands to my left, but instead of releasing the doorknob and switching sides, I close the space between me and the door so he's no longer directly beside me. I'm even closer to you now. I turn the doorknob. Here we are, at the main exhibit of the McIntyre Museum. I want to tell you what it's like being surrounded by these light blue walls again. Our framed puzzles are still there. The astronaut waiting for the train, my favorite. The map of Brazil, which is brutal but fun to piece together. An open suitcase containing another suitcase piled high with Russian nesting dolls. And Pompeii, our very first. If I had to take a shot at describing what it's like, I would call it my resurrection. But this wonder, this second life, is short-lived. All the air is squeezed out of me when I see photos of you and Jackson on the windowsill beside your bed, right where our photos used to be. Your arm is wrapped around Jackson's shoulder in one, and your smile is really wide. It's an image I'm familiar with, of course, which is why it feels so out of place. I turn away from the window before the other photos stab me, before I flip out on Jackson, demanding to know if he made you take our pictures down. But I only find more foreign objects. Next to the graphic novels I gave you is a box set of 4 mass-market thrillers. I don't know if it's a gift from Jackson or completely unrelated. The dreamcatcher on the floor is new, too. And I don't know if it's from some special event with Jackson, like the Batman figure I got designed with your face, which is still perched on top of your bookcase. I don't want to ask Jackson anything. I was wrong before. I don't want to be clued into your life without me. I can't do this. I'd run out, almost tripping over myself. Jackson is calling for me, but I can't be with him right now, so I charge out of your apartment and down the stairs. Thank God I never took off my jacket because it's freezing out here. I stop running at the corner, shaking. I look to the sky, squinting at the sun between the clouds before closing my eyes to see your face in my memory more clearly. But the you I'm remembering isn't the same you I found upstairs in your room. You were finally able to speak back to me, Theo. And I don't like everything you had to say. I'm beat down by the time I walk through the front door. One of the lessons I've learned over and over since our breakup and your death is how the pain becomes physical. My body aches. I'm so drained, you would think it was like the time we rode our bikes around Central Park for 3 laps, the number still bothers me, and we powered up that steep hill. My stomach tightened, my legs burned, my arms were sore, and my throat was dry. I'm just as ready for a nap now as I was then. I go straight for my room, ignoring my mom as she closes her laptop and calls for me. She shouts for my dad to let him know I'm home. But alone time means only you and me. Not mom, not dad. I walk into my room, close my door, and throw myself on my bed, too drained even to cry. I hope you don't think this means I'm grieving you any less. Blame it on my body. I'm burrowing into our pillows when my door opens. True to my idiot nature, I forgot something key in the game of warding off unwanted people. The lock. I wish I could vanish into one of my alternate universes right now. Did Jackson get back okay? Mom asks. Yeah, Jackson is back at Theo's, where he's grieving his loss, I say, turning around and sitting up. You were ready to call Theo Jackson's loss again, weren't you? She nods, like I actually needed her to confirm what was what. You both loved him, Griffin. I'm not pretending his pain isn't there, too.
Nope, that's Dad's job, I say.
What did your father do? Mom asks. Dad stays quiet, probably debating whether or not he's going to arm up and go to battle with me. He made Jackson really uncomfortable, like even I wasn't that cold to him, I say. I can only imagine being outside my state, outside my time zone, in the home of someone who tried to make an enemy out of me, feeling unwelcome and helpless. Cut it out, Griffin, Dad snaps. His tone reminds me of when I would get into trouble as a kid over little things, like trying to sneak into their bedroom to scare my mom while she was working, or yelling fake words over and over for attention.
You can't be pissed at your mother for being too nice to that guy and pissed at me for being too cold to him.
So you admit you were cold to him? I snapped back.
I won't deny it. I wasn't very welcoming. But that's because I know my son. I don't believe you're actually upset at your mother or me. We won't fight you if you don't fight us. What does Wade call us?
Team Griffin? The Griffin Squad, I correct. The Griffin Squad, Dad repeats. We know seeing Jackson can't be easy, but you soldiered through it anyway. I hope it's helped you out in some way. If not, he's gone, and you never have to see him again. But we're here for you, and want to know what you need from us.
I do need something, I say.
What?
Mom asks.
Space. Please give me some space. I'm really tired.
I can't cry. I can't fight.
Dad begins protesting, but Mom shuts him up, thankfully. They're out in no time, and I find enough energy to close the door behind them, locking it this time. I get back in bed and crawl under my covers, expecting to fall asleep instantly. Of course I don't. Considering the week and year and month and life I've been having, I'm stupid to think I'd even be lucky with the small things.
History. Thursday, December 25th, 2014.
This is the first year the squad isn't doing Secret Santa. We usually pull names out of Wade's fitted hat, but now that Theo and I are dating, there was no way we weren't going to get each other gifts on the side if one of us drew Wade's name. It's the kind of stuff that makes our relationship unfair to our friendship with Wade. We broke tradition, which Wade seemed a little bummed about, but he snapped out of it when he realized he'd be getting an extra gift. Having already spent the morning and afternoons with our own families, it's nice to kick back in Wade's bedroom. We're listening to his jazz playlist on his new speakers. Theo holds out his phone and clicks on my name.
Check out your new contact photo.
It's the photo I texted him this morning of me standing beside my Christmas tree, holding the Ron Weasley ornament he got me on the day our history began. It's wild how two seasons later, I'm still blushing because of this guy. Wade must see it because he distributes the presents Theo and I left underneath the mini Christmas tree when we first arrived.
Theo and I agreed at the beginning of the month that our presents had to be thoughtfully random. It basically just meant I couldn't buy him a puzzle, and he couldn't buy me anything Harry Potter-centric, which sucks because I got zero Harry Potter-related gifts this year for the first time since I don't know when. A keychain would have been appreciated. The gift Theo got me, a small box wrapped in emerald green paper, makes me wonder if I put too much thought into my gift for him. Mine is in a big box. We look at each other nervously. We go in a circle, pushing Wade to go first. Wade starts with mine, which is this little known novel, The Adventures of the Courtesan and Gollum. It's a dark comedy about a barren prostitute who steals a potion from her sorcerer client to create a child and ends up bringing a golem to life.
I have no idea if it's good, I say, holding up my hands. But you were dropping hints recently you'd be interested in giving fiction another shot if something else crossed your way. If you know more books like this, you need to stop hogging them and share. Wade smiles.
Thanks a lot, Griff.
Griffin,
Theo coughs out. He insists on being the only person besides my dad who calls me Griff.
Control freak,
Wade coughs back. He shakes his head and scans the back cover.
This sounds up my alley. I'm not sure what that says about me, but I'm in.
Thanks, Griffin.
He opens Theo's present, a dozen different ties. There's also a note telling him to step up his wardrobe game.
Wardrobe is about to be on point. Thanks, Theodore McIntyre. Is it okay if I call you that, Theodore McIntyre?
Theo will do, Theo says, smiling. They fist bump.
Your turn, I tell Theo.
Bastard.
Theo opens Wade's gift, an illustrated cocktail recipe collection.
Once your early admission is approved, I want you to know how to underage drink responsibly, Wade says.
Theo and I laugh. Then Theo slides my gift for him a little closer. I really wish this moment could be private. You don't have to be dating someone to tell if they don't like a gift.